Hello, yes?
Hello. Hi, this is Tom Sudhoff.
Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for this interview.
First question will be when they call you to let you know that you won the Nobel Prize. Can you tell us a little bit about this story?
The story of how I learned that I was awarded the Nobel Prize is actually a little unusual, and many people already know about this. Because you can hear the telephone call on the website of the Nobel Foundation. And I was traveling in Spain in a car, driving in Spain, trying to go to a meeting when I was called about this wonderful news for me. And I initially didn't quite believe it, and it took me some moments to realize that it was true, and so I was very surprised by the news.
Yes. How was your reaction?
I was obviously extremely happy, but also wondering whether or not that might not be a mistake.
Can you explain us a little bit your Nobel Prize awarded work to the audience?
I can try. I think at some level it is actually very straightforward. When you think about the brain, which arguably is the most important organ in the body, the way the brain works is that it's composed of billions and billions and billions of nerve cells that constantly talk to each other. And the language with which they speak involves a chemical signal that is released from one nerve cell and recognized by the other nerve cell. And this chemical signal that mediates the information transfer, the speaking, this chemical signal is released at specialized connections between these nerve cells, which are called synapses. My work tried to understand how a nerve cell can speak, how it can release this chemical signal so that it can talk to another nerve cell. And the work that we did is thus about a fundamental process that allows the brain to function. It is about how the brain is able to process information, to feel, and to make decisions about what to do. All of this, in the end, involves the continuous communication of nerve cells with each other at synapses.
How long did it take you to discover all these things?
We started working on the project in 1986, and major discoveries were made in the 1990s, but I think some of the most important work was done in after 2000. So I would say that the project overall took about 20 years.
What are the possible clinical applications of your discoveries?
That's an incredibly important question because there are many diseases that impair brain function, devastating diseases that are very, very cause a lot of suffering. Diseases such as Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, but also schizophrenia and depression and autism and many more. The problem with all of these diseases from a medical standpoint is that we do not know what is happening in these diseases. We do not understand these diseases. We don't know what the cause is. We don't know what actually goes wrong. And we cannot know this, we cannot understand this, if we do not understand more about how the brain works. Our discoveries, our work, sheds light on how the brain works, but only a small step. There is much more that needs to be done. The work that we did, and most of the work I believe that is currently done that is truly scientific and not just propaganda, to call it this, much of true science is still at the level where we are trying to elucidate the basic processes that guide brain function. And without that, there is no clinical applications. So the work that we did certainly has no real clinical applications. It has relevance for understanding botulism and tetanus, but those are rare disorders. However, this type of work and those of my colleagues, my many, many colleagues on different parts of the brain, this type of work is absolutely essential if we ever are going to develop any understanding and treatment for brain diseases, because at present, without that information, we can't really rationally make any progress in treating these diseases. So current evidence strongly suggests that most diseases that affect the brain are related to genetic changes. And these genetic changes probably predispose to diseases, and they play a central role in the development of the disease, but they alone do not explain the disease. We need to actually understand what happens in a disease. Most neural brain diseases are not autoimmune diseases. However, MS, multiple sclerosis, likely involves a major immunological component, and many diseases probably or possibly may involve an inflammatory component, which is not autoimmune, which is inflammatory. In the end, it's going to be that we need to understand how the neurons in the brain bind to each other, interact with each other. I'm sorry.
What guided you to the science, and how did you start to work in the field?
I started to work in science because I was a medical student, and I realized that in medicine, the treatments, especially of brain diseases, but also of other diseases, are very incomplete and largely unsuccessful. And that the reason for that was that we did not actually understand the diseases, and we didn't understand the healthy organism either. So I was motivated initially to gain insight into how the human body works and what goes wrong in disease, because I felt that the medical practice could not treat diseases adequately. I was furthermore greatly intrigued and fascinated by how, in many ways, beautiful biology is. How wonderful a body is, how dramatic, how magic in many ways the brain is. You know, the brain can do a lot of stuff, and we have no idea how it does it, but it's a fantastic organ that is impressive in its capabilities.
And how did you choose the topic to do your thesis, to your doctoral thesis?
So my doctoral thesis was really done with the advice of my mentors, which I did my doctoral thesis in Germany. And to be honest, I don't think it matters what you work on your thesis, because it gives you a basic education in science, but it doesn't really matter what you work on. It's important what you work on later on in a career when you actually choose your own subject. When you are a scientist and you're in training, like when you're a student or when you're a postdoctoral fellow, you really depend on your learning, in your learning, on your mentors, on your teachers. And Brown and Goldstein were my teachers when I was a postdoctoral fellow, and I learned most what I know in science from them. So they were both inspiring scientists and great mentors, and I profited tremendously from observing how they worked and trying to learn from them how they worked so I could do it in my own lab as well. And indeed, I've tried to copy many of the things they have done in my own lab.
Would you like to leave a message for the young scientists?
My most important message would be that in science, the most important goal for a scientist, once you are have the freedom or the opportunity to choose what you work on is to work on a subject, a question that interests you. When you are in training, when you are learning, when you are a student or a postdoctoral fellow, the subject is not important. The teacher is important. The mentor is important. The quality of the mentor is important. But once you are beyond that stage and you are in a position to actually decide what question you yourself want to work on, I think the most important factor should be what is actually interesting to you personally. What are you passionate about? What do you think is worthwhile to pursue? That's more important than what you think might be funded or what's fashionable. It is really important to work on things that are of importance to the person who works on it, because science, in the end, is not a well-paid and safe career. And the only reason to be a scientist is because you believe in your talent and in the importance of your work on, of what you work on, and otherwise it's not worth doing.
Thomas, thank you very much for the interview. It's been a pleasure and a great honor talking to you.
Pleasure is all mine. Thank you. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.